Cutting Audio. Deathlands.
Here it comes!
Outlanders.
Warning, meltdown imminent.
The Executioner.
Tag, you're it.
Stony Man.
Brace for impact!
Now playing at the theater in your mind.
Cutting Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Timberly Chanel, Kate Torrey, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands 64, Bloodfire. On through the night they rode, seven people on six horses, the unshod hooves of the animals pounding against the hard-packed sand of the desert. Streaks of light were starting to brighten the overcast sky as dawn slowly came to the Deathlands. Thunder rumbled in the distance, lightning flashing bright as a gigavolt of electricity slashed into the planet like fire trying to cauterize an open wound. Suddenly, a ravine yawned wide in the ground before the companions, the edges sparkling with a residue of salt that infused the entire landscape from the crashing ocean tidal wave caused by the new cost so very long ago. Digging in their heels, the companions urged the animals to go faster and jump the pit, landing hard. The horse with two riders went to its knees for a moment. Then, struggling erect once more, it continued after the others. The seven friends were red-eyed and hunched over, exhausted from the race for survival. The bridles of the horses were sopping wet with saliva and flecked with foam. The humans and horses were all drenched in sweat, the chill of the night slowly passing as the fiery sun exploded over the horizon, bathing the world in its fire. Moving to the steady motion of the powerful stallion he rode, Ryan Cotter fought his exhaustion and tried to stay in control of the beast. Tiny particles of sand and salt hit his scarred face like invisible sleet, getting underneath the leather patch that covered the ravaged hole of his left eye. His clothes were stiff with dried sweat and caked with blood, thankfully none of it his. Escaping from Rock Point had been a nightmare of snipers on the walls and savage cougars running wild in the streets. The weapons he had stolen from the local baron's secret arsenal were long gone, and now Ryan carried only his personal blasters, a 9mm Sig Sauer at his hip, and a bolt-action Steyr SSG-70 long blaster strapped across his back. The blasters had been with him a long time, and in his expert hands, they usually proved more than deadly enough for anything the Deathlands could throw his way. Not everything, but most. Following a swell in the sandy ground, the group of people slowed as the horses galloped up the sloping side of a large sand dune. As the panting animals crested the top, Ryan saw that the dune stretched hundreds of feet and offered the friends a good panoramic view of the desert in every direction. Perfect. If that damned APC came their way again, its headlights would give away its approach in plenty of time for them to ride off again.
Give the horses a rest! Let's stop for five.
Pulling back on the reins, the companions allowed their mounts to slow to a canter, then walked them to an easy stop. As the dawn steadily grew brighter in the east, the others could now see that the dune was covered with green plants of some kind. Hungrily, the horses sniffed at the vegetation, then snorted and turned away in disgust. The reek of salt from the mutant weeds was strong enough for the humans to detect. The plants were as inedible as the sand itself. Sliding off the rear of the mount he shared with Ryan's young son, J.B. Dick stretched a few times to work the kinks out of his sore muscles. Dark night, he thought. It had been a mighty cramped ride sharing the horse, and more than once he'd been sure he'd lose his grip on the saddle and go flying off. Short and wiry, John Barrymore Dix was dressed in a loose shirt and trousers, a leather pilot's jacket, and fingerless gloves. An Uzi machine pistol hung across his chest, and an S&W M4000 shotgun was slung over his back.
Just in case I forgot to say it before, thanks for saving my ass back there.
JB offered a hand to the boy. Still on the horse, Dean Carter stopped massaging the neck of the big Appaloosa stallion and looked down at the adult. Appearing many years older than his real age of 12, Dean had a bloody streak across his face where some hot lead from a sec man's blaster had just grazed his cheek during the escape. The youth was growing rapidly, and there was little doubt that he would be even taller than his father someday. A veteran of more than a few battles, Dean had a Browning high-power pistol holstered on his hip, and a homemade crossbow and quiver hung across his chest. The bulky weapons had been in the way often during the ride, but he needed the room behind to fit JB on the horse. Reaching down, Dean took the offered hand, and the two shook before breaking into weary smiles.
No problem.
JB released his grip and turned to walk to the edge of the dune. Tilting his fedora to block the wash of growing sunlight, the man studied the sprawling landscape to the north, then reached into the canvas bag hanging at his side, rummaging through the fuses and black powder bombs to unearth a brass cylinder about the size and shape of a soup can. With an expert snap, he extended the antique telescope to its full length and swept the distant horizon to the north, adjusting the device's focal length.
Looks clear. I think we lost them.
Thank Gaia for that.
Christy Roth reached into the backpack tied just behind her saddle. The rawhide lashings were loose from the wild ride, but the pack of food and ammo was thankfully still there. Sticking up from the gun boot attached to the saddle was the stock of a recently acquired long blaster called a Holland & Holland 475 Nitro Express. It was the biggest weapon the woman had ever seen, and firing it almost wrenched her arm from the socket. But the big bore rounds did a hell of a lot worse to the sec men they hit, blowing one man clean out of his saddle and beheading another. She was down to only a few more rounds for the monster, after which it would become a liability instead of an asset. Tall and full-breasted, with an explosion of fiery red hair and emerald green eyes, Christy looked more like a baron's plaything than a tough survivor, and many fools had died learning the truth of the matter.
No more than one drink apiece.
A stocky black woman poured some water from her own canteen into a cupped hand and offered it to her panting horse.
We need to conserve until we reach fresh water again.
Eagerly, the animal lapped at the fluid, its rough tongue seeking every drop. Dr. Mildred Wyeth wore a red flannel shirt and U.S. Army fatigue pants, her ebony hair fashioned into beaded plaits. A patched satchel hung from her shoulder, and the checkered grip of a Czech ZKR target pistol poked out of her shirt, where she had tucked the weapon away for safekeeping. Mildred had almost lost the blaster twice from the rough ride over the irregular salt flats, and had no intention of challenging fate a third time. Although she rarely spoke of the matter, Mildred considered her personal portion of luck long gone. Back in the 20th century, she had gone into the hospital for a routine operation, but there had been complications, and the technicians froze her to save her life. Ryan freed her from cryogenic suspension 100 years later, a stranger in a new and desperate land.
We'll find water.
Christy pulled out a canteen from her backpack.
That pipe under the temple had to come from somewhere, and the Grandy River isn't that far.
Then she paused for a moment until the throbbing in her temples subsided. Her hair had been cut by an arrow in the fight at the Ville, and the pain still lingered. As she stroked the filaments, they coiled tighter, almost protectively about her hand. And as the dull agony eased somewhat, the animated hair relaxed once more into a crimson cascade about her shoulders. Taking a very small sip from the canteen, Christy carefully washed out her mouth before taking a long drink. Born and raised in Colorado, she had learned early in life to always cut the dust from your mouth before drinking, or else you remained thirsty and wasted precious water taking a second, unnecessary drink. Finally lowering the canteen, Christy wiped her mouth dry on the sleeve of her bearskin coat and tightly screwed the cap back onto the container. Waste not, die not, as her mother always used to say. Tucking the battered tin canteen safely away, Christy fingered her S&W Model 640 revolver to make sure it was still with her after the wild ride. Then, kneeling, the redhead checked the knife tucked into one of her cowboy boots.